Every Sunday and Wednesday in London, there are bear baitings. The bear pit is circular with stands around the top for spectators. The ground space below is empty. Here, a large bear on a rope was tied to a stake. Then a number of great English Mastiff dogs were brought in and shown to the bear. After this, they baited the bear, one after the other. Although the dogs were struck and mauled by the bear, they did not give in. They had to be pulled off by sheer force or their mouths forced open with sticks. The bear's teeth were not sharp and they could not injure the dogs. They'd been broken short. When the bear was tired, a white bull was brought in. One dog at a time was set on him. He speared these with his horns and tossed them so they could not get the better of him. Lastly, they brought in an old blind bear, which boys hit with canes and sticks. But he knew how to untie his lead and ran back to his stall. In Congleton, Cheshire, the town had its own bear, but it died in 1601. There is a story that the council wanted a new one but didn't have any money, so they ordered that the town Bible be sold to pay for it. Up in Scotland, the Tudor Mary Queen of Scots ruled, but she upset the Scottish people, had some bad habits. It has to be said she was suspected of blowing up her husband. Mary ran away from her angry Scottish lords and fled to England. She thought her cousin Elizabeth I would help her. Elizabeth helped her into jail for 19 years. Mary plotted to escape and have Elizabeth murdered, so Elizabeth I had Mary, Queen of Scots, executed. Well, wouldn't you? You'd think the Scots would be upset. They weren't. It was the Spanish who were really mad. Within a year, they sent a great fleet of ships to attack England and avenge Mary. Anyway, the mighty Spanish galleons sailed against the little English ships. Queen Elizabeth herself spoke to her gallant troops. A report written long after Queen Liz died said that she made this great speech.
My loving people, I have been told to be careful for my safety, to take heed when I stand before my army for fear of treachery. But I tell you, I would rather die than distrust my faithful and loving people. Let tyrants fear. My greatest strength is the loyal hearts and goodwill of the English people. That is why I come amongst you at this time, not for my pleasure, but determined in the heat of battle to live or die amongst you all. To lay down mine honour and even my blood in the dust for my God, for my kingdom, and for my people. I know I have the body of a weak and feeble woman, but I have the heart and stomach of a king, and a king of England too. And take scorn that Spain or any prince of Europe dares to invade the borders of my realm.
...130 mighty galleons left Spain in the summer of 1588. Only 50 returned late that September, thanks to the English sailors under the command of the mighty Admiral Francis Drake. The fleet cost the Spanish a fortune, and I'm not surprised. They were only getting about 10 miles to the galleon. The Tudors came in with a charge of knights and flashing swords. It was the last such charge in the history of England. They went out with another great charge, but it was the charge of a single horseman. Queen Elizabeth I took too long to die. She became feeble and lost all the Tudor energy that had driven England for over 100 years. The country was like a car running out of petrol, slowly coasting to a stop. No one cared. Even the servants in our last palace at Richmond left the place filthy and uncared for. Then, on the night of the 23rd of March, 1603, the Queen's lady-in-waiting, Philadelphia Scrope, crossed to a palace window and opened it. She slipped the sapphire ring off her finger and passed it out to her brother, Sir Robert Carey. It was the signal he'd been waiting for, a signal that the last Tudor was dead. Even though Philadelphia and Robert were the Queen's cousins, they weren't going to hang around and weep for the dead woman. They were going to make their fortune by being part of the future. Robert jumped onto the first of a string of fast horses he had arranged along the road north. He galloped through the city, past the carts loaded with the victims of the latest plague, and out of the city. By evening, he was in Doncaster. Just 60 hours after leaving London, he clattered into Edinburgh. He was covered in blood from a fall on the road through the borders, but King James VI of Scotland welcomed him and sat down to hear the news he'd been waiting for so long. "Elizabeth is dead. You are named as the next king." The days of Tudor terror were finished as the slimy Stuarts took over, but that's another story for another time. History's always like that. No sooner have the old died than the new takes over. The old are remembered and preserved in history books. Some of the old are remembered fondly. Henry VIII is remembered as a strong ruler, and Elizabeth has been called the queen of a golden age. The pain and the misery they caused are often forgotten. To see the past clearly, you don't just need history. You need horrible history. We hope you enjoyed learning about the despicable goings-on of our ancestors as much as we did when we made these CDs. Don't forget to watch out for other CD audiobooks on special packs of Kellogg cereals. You can learn about the rotten Romans, the measly Middle Ages, the vile Victorians, incredible Ireland, and the vicious Vikings. Look for the whole horrible lot.
Horrible Histories are written and read by Terry Deary and produced by Nick Baker for Testbed Productions. Original music is by Danny Fromaggio, sound design by Dirk Maggs. Horrible Histories are published by Scholastic Children's Books. And they're really horrible!